Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right, 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good.
Ollie, I feel like I'm going to really relate to this woman because she grew up with eight brothers.
Yes.
And I grew up with three. I mean, a little bit different, but I know what it's like to be the only girl with a bunch of boys and in show business.
Marie
Osmond. Yes.
What is their famous song?
It Takes Two.
Oh, right. It takes two to make a thing go right. That, right?
Yeah.
No.
Their life is so fascinating.
Yes.
And when you think about them being child performers, Vegas teenage years for her. I mean, her story is wild.
Imagine the people, the iconic celebrities that they probably were hanging
out. Oh, we're going to talk about all of those things. But yes, and also growing up in the public eye and during that time. And and she does so much. She's,
oh, I know.
You know, she has eight kids of her own. She does a million different things. She's quite the Renaissance woman.
Yeah.
She looks fabulous. So I'm also happy to get her alone and not with the brothers because it's a different perspective when you have,
it's true,
you know, and then maybe next time we'll
do Donnie.
We'll do a couple of the bros or something.
All right, let her in.
Hello?
You look beautiful.
Oh my God, you look so great.
Oh, you're so nice. I think this is so cool that you both are doing this.
Oh, thanks. We love it.
I love you both. I think you're both so talented. And I have watched your family forever. My brothers used to hang out with Kurt, your pa. Is that what you call him?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was a little girl and had the biggest crush on him when he'd come over and play Monopoly and all these games with my brothers.
But
they did Disney. What did they do? It was called The Travels of Jamie McFeeters together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Well, I've been around for six decades, so I'm like an oldie. So I have lots of, you know, you run into people. It's kind of fun.
We think we're a big family, but holy fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, and you have eight. I mean, you're
eight
the
brothers.
Only girl.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to have you without one of your brothers.
Yeah, it is actually.
Because we can really delve into what that, I mean, I'm one of three brothers.
Yeah, Donnie's an asshole anyway. He didn't show up. You know what I mean? Donnie didn't show up. He doesn't care.
What did you say? He has no soul? I agree with you.
Oh my God. But eight brothers. I mean, I thought it was, I always say.
Yeah, what's crazy? All the same parents. You know? Yes. Mm-hmm. There were nine kids in our family.
Wow.
And but it is different being the only girl.
A girl who grew up with only brothers and no sisters is a very specific female.
Yes.
And I can usually pick them right out of I could talk to them for 20 minutes and be like, you only have brothers.
Yeah. The ones that are like chewing tobacco, spitting on the ground,
our breed.
Drinking whiskey.
Is that me?
Yeah.
I only dipped for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
but you have all brothers, right?
All brothers. Yeah. That I grew up with. I mean, I have sisters, but
we're
just now starting to connect. But
yeah. But I still, but there's something about our girlfriends that are very important. And I call us guy chicks. You know, lots of women can be very high maintenance and moody. And I'm just not. I'm just kind of like a guy. You just kind of happens and you get over it. Mm-hmm. And we are a little bit different.
You know, when you grow up with a bunch of boys, it's like you have to get on with things really fast.
Really fast.
And then only until I got older, I was like, oh, I really need girlfriends and I need to like actually nurture this side of me that I haven't been able to nurture as much with my male siblings, you know?
Yeah. I think we understand men pretty well. I mean, I understand men pretty well. I've always gotten along with guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Always.
So. The thing is, I understand
Oliver,
women really well.
I know
well,
who you
though.
Are, Oliver. Okay, yeah. Let's just go right to it.
I understand women. I understand women extremely well. I have a strong feminine side. I think it's, I do. Ask Aaron.
What the fuck? You were, first of all, what are you talking about?
I know women. I'm sensitive. I'm extremely over emotional. I have too much compassion. I can relate to the female experience. I can relate to the female experience.
This is not, you are creating a narrative.
No, because I had no father for a long time. All I had was mom. Okay. So she raised me and then you came in.
And her boyfriends.
And her boyfriends who were, you know what I mean? I gravitated towards mom. I understood what it was like to live as a woman. And I took that in. I imprinted that on me. That's why I've been in relationships all my life.
This is the most insane.
It's true.
But there is truth in this because, you know, I study a lot of psychology. I have eight children. So, you know, I find it fascinating. But men who are raised predominantly by their mothers, the mother in general, this is a generalized statement that a lot of therapy and people that I know have talked about, that when you have a home that's predominantly raised by women, mm-hmm. Mothers are tough on their daughters and they spoil their sons. And daddies nurture their daughters and the dads are tough on their sons.
Interesting. And so I just got the shit end of the stick in all of this. Didn't really have my dad. Mom was hard on me. This is making a lot of sense. You are the therapy session I didn't know I needed. But
I've been in relationships all my life. I've never been a womanizer, really. No. Meaning I've enjoyed women in my life,
but
I've never been a player. I've never been like a bad man to woman to women.
No, there's
ever.
A difference between being a player and like a not nice guy.
Not a player.
Girl.
But it's very fascinating because I think we have a generation of women now that are very tough.
Yeah.
And men that like to play, you know, sit on the couch and play Nintendo because mm-hmm. their dads didn't kick them in the butt and say, get up. Now, my dad was very, you know, people, he was so tough. No, it was that generation. Mm-hmm. And I think because my mother was so loving, I had like the greatest mom in the world. But if I were raised just by my mom, I would just, you know, be loved and whatever. But it was my dad that taught me my work ethic. It was my dad that taught me. And my mom taught me to have, you know, just show up and, you know, that my career was my job and that this was a life and that they were separate and that the jobs will come and go. But who are you as a person? Mm-hmm. And so, you know,
that's
I was
like
very blessed. Yeah. Women tend to make their daughters think that way, you know?
I mean, that's so important because at such a young age, you were in the spotlight and it was like, holy shit. I mean, that can go off the rails really quickly unless you have a parent or parents who are grounding you and putting it all into a reality perspective.
When did you guys start in the business?
I mean, she came out of the womb like performing.
Right? Because I was three when I started. But
that's,
I think you were that crazy. Young, weren't you?
Me, no. I was always attracted to the arts. So anything I wanted to do was dance, singing, performing.
Mom held her back, honestly.
But mom was like, no,
you're going to go be a high school girl. You're going to do plays.
That's really awesome.
And then when you're 18, you can do whatever you want.
And it was great because she let me do a couple, like one audition. And then I would do things like someone, if there was like a table reading or something, people would go, can Katie come read for the young girl on this table read? And I was like, please, mom, let me read. And and she'd be like, okay, you can go do things like that. But I was always chomping at the bit to, you know, I mean, if there was a talent show, I was like, signing up for everything and anything.
She signed up for like four spots in the talent show.
It's interesting.
Different names.
Just, I could do all of those.
Assumed
things.
Identities. She's like, my name is Bert Lovelace.
Like,
what?
Yeah, you guys are definitely siblings.
Oh, that's so funny. But it's true. But, you know, your entire family was musical. Were your parents, well, what did your parents do?
How did this happen?
How did this all happen?
Right? Crazy. So it was not, you know, stage parents, you know, you've seen them. Mm-hmm. Not my parents. And my dad had three businesses. He was in insurance. He ran the post office. He was a very busy guy. He had nine children, you know. Well, at that time he had eight. And my mom was an efficiency expert for the War Department when they met. And she played saxophone. My dad sang. He had a beautiful voice, sang in a boys choral group growing up. But his father died when he was like 3 weeks old or somewhere around there. And so he was constantly raised by stepfathers. And so he didn't really have family. You know, he did not have an easy life. It was a very hard life for him. And so family was everything to them. They met and that was all they just wanted. My parents were so tight. They were so loyal, so dedicated. And they really didn't want us to be in show business, but it just kept happening, you know, like the Disney thing. You know, my mother made their clothes, all their shirts. And so as they grew out of them, she just had to make one more and they kept matching. It was the cheap way to dress them.
All right.
And they were in Disney and this group they call the Dapper Dans. They're still there. They're different people, of course, but that's their name. Saw them and said, you boys sing. And they had this incredible harmony. My brothers had like, I've never met anybody who has that harmony ever, children. And they were like 2, 4, 6, and 8 years old and they were like perfect harmony. Wow. And so Walt Disney put them on a show called Disneyland After Dark and that's where Andy Williams' father saw them. And then they did the Andy Williams show and then the rest was kind of history. So I was three years old when I did Andy's show. And
where are you in the pecking order, by the way?
Next to the last. I'm number 8. But he introduced me as the youngest Osmond brother. No.
So you were 3.
Mm-hmm.
Your first performance.
Yeah.
Did you know what the hell you were doing or what was going on?
Honestly, you know, you guys know what it's like. But see, there's a difference between having the parents that are famous and being the kid. I was a sibling where my brothers were famous.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, do you really like me for me? Or are you just trying to get to me to see my brothers and things like that? But I just thought every family did that.
Yeah.
And you know how that works, Kate, right?
That's right. She was like, a lot of Kate's friends were only friends with her to get to me.
Because of you. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why we're not friends anymore.
Yeah, that's why.
You know, I dated Brett, right?
Oh, that's right.
Uncle Brett?
Yeah.
How long did you date him?
Well, I wasn't allowed to really date till I was 16, but you know, we kind of liked each other. I was like 4. He'd come to Vegas and see the shows and things, but I was too young.
Yeah.
He's older than me, right? How old is he now?
He was the youngest. He's the youngest.
But I remember when your parents were dating. Because I was dating Brett. Yeah.
So you were dating but Brett we were when not, mom we met were, dad?
Can we say dating? I was really, he was so cute and so lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we would like sneak into the, you know, the halls of CBS and,
right.
and spend like time
fool,
together.
And like yeah. fool around.
That's so like 70s. No, I love it.
I was so young. And, but he, oh, I mean, everybody was in love with the Hudson brothers and yeah. their TV show was on while we were doing television. And right. we talked a lot about how television at that time was so huge. I mean, there were like three stations and maybe an independent. And, I mean, I know that, George Lucas used our show to debut Star Wars because yeah. we've been 17 languages and all over yeah. the world. But I think your brother, they were so talented, but Brett and I would say, you know, they're making you be comedians and they're going to dumb down your music and their
right.
television was tough back then.
Yeah.
No, so, I know.
Anyway,
and they're such talented musicians.
They're actually back together again and going to go on the road.
I know.
I mean, the Hudson brothers are going to do a little mini tour.
Okay. So let's talk. So you are 3 years old. You're number eight. You start growing up in this. What's the age difference? The youngest is how
we're
old?
We're all 2 years apart. And then my youngest brother's 3 years apart.
Okay. So did you feel just terribly lonely? Or did you feel different than your brothers? Or did you feel like, were there sort of alliances? Like, did certain people get along better than others?
Okay. So I can tell you were raised around brothers because out of all the years of being interviewed, and I'm in, like I said, my sixth decade of a female who has worked consistently my whole life, every year, never been asked that question.
Really?
Yeah. So right. I can, so that is that now you, cause I was curious about you because of this, but yes, it's lonely, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 And yes, there are groups. And because my brothers were a group and they performed together, I was the sibling that was different always. Mm-hmm. And I did work with Donnie. You know, we worked on that, on the Donnie Marie show for a few years. We did a talk show for a year. And then we went to Vegas and that was like 11 year run. But I had my family. We never saw each other except on stage because, you know, he'd fly home to Utah. I lived in Vegas. And so, but it's different. It's a different relationship when you're the only girl.
Yeah, it really is.
I don't have
is.
A lot of girlfriends, but the ones I have are very special to me.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah. Well,
you don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand mm-hmm. of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female founded.
Yes. I love a female founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think. And it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
When you're saying it was lonely, and were there groups? Were you closer with one of your brothers than the other?
Yeah. I've said my brother Wayne is my sister, you know. He's the one I would always go to talk about things or whatever. He's just lovely. Very, very smart. My three older brothers wrote a lot of their hit records. And Wayne, I would liken him to probably the John Lennon. He was the more serious. He was the amazing lyricist. And then Alan and Merrill wrote a lot of their hits. They were the more jovial Paul McCartney-ish kind of person. I use that only because my brothers were very, very popular. I mean, I remember once we were in London and Paul, the door knocked and answered it. And it was Paul McCartney. He goes, "I'm so sorry to bother you, but could I get your autographs for my daughter?" And I'm like, "Honey, you can have anything you want." Like Led Zeppelin would come see the shows. But my brothers, because of the television show, Donnie Marie, their music got shoved aside. Mm. But they were incredible. I mean,
Was there resentment because of that?
No. My brothers have always been great. We've always been a close family. Yeah. We're very supportive of each other. So
what do you feel like your sort of influences for the brothers? Like how do they see you? What's your perception of how they see you?
Well, I think they're very proud of me. You know, I do. I think they're very proud of me. But I always, for example, I chose country music, not only because I loved that women, because remember, I came from that era where it was really tough for women in the business. And I didn't want a 3-year career. And so I was probably a little more analytical. But I realized that, you know, Loretta Lynn, who I knew, and people like that, they could have children and families and still have huge careers and sing songs and write music and do all this stuff. And so I really like country for that reason. And my voice lent towards it. But over the years, I mean, like my current album, I mean, I'm 64 and it debuted number one on Billboard. And I'm like, shut up, I'm too old for this. But it's like opera, legit soprano and all that. So having a long career has been such a gift. Because I have been able to do lots of different styles of music. I sing in my show that I do. I don't do a lot of them anymore, but when I work with big symphonies or orchestras, or if I do my solo show, but I do probably 7 different styles of music in it. And so it's really fun. It keeps life interesting, which I love what you do because you can always be somebody else or do something or whatever. You see that in a lot of entertainers don't see that, where you can be very diverse and you are it. And this is a compliment to you because I see people get stuck in boxes and you sing and you do this and you've pushed yourself and your comedic timing is fantastic and all of this. And, you know, I love that because you don't have to be stuck. I mean, I was a doll sculptor for 25 years. I had one of the biggest doll companies and I started children. I don't know if you know this, but like I started Children's Miracle Network. Right. And, you know, we've raised over $9 billion for children. 100% of it goes to kids. Oh, you can't get stuck in the minutia of one thing. You have to keep giving and going and doing and having all these different passions. If you go to my Instagram, I've worked with the best makeup people on the planet and I'm putting a number into the show. I had it in Vegas for a little while.
Is it just in your blood? Do you ever chill?
Do I chill? Yeah. I'm going out to ride my motorcycle with my husband after this. So
you are. But that's an activity. Do you ever just straight up chill? Sit down, put your feet up.
Yeah. I don't know though, because you know, either I'm making something or doing something. Yeah.
What kind of motorcycle?
I can chill enough when I'm in the grave. So I like to do.
I'm with you on that. I'm a doer too. Although I like to watch movies.
I like to watch TV. I like to watch certain shows. Yeah, I enjoy that.
What was happening with the Osmonds at that time? Like when the older ones started getting older, was there breaking off that happened? And was that problematic? Were there arguments happening?
Well, you can't be a sibling and not argue.
Right.
And my dad always said, if you can get along with your siblings, you can get along with anybody. And I believe that. Because you can choose your friends. You sure can't pick your sibling, right? Mm-hmm. And so we learned to get along. We learned to respect each other's differences. But it's different when you're the only girl, you know? I was a watcher I observed. And so I don't drink, I don't smoke, but, and I know it's a religious thing for me, but before as a kid, it's more like I really chose it because so many of my friends aren't here anymore. They've all died or they're wasted or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so much talent, I would see all this talent just go down the drain. And it, I was maybe a little more analytical as a kid. And so I knew if I went to the parties that I would eventually partake and get involved. I mean, I just knew it because I had a rough childhood. I was abused backstage and realized the safest place was on stage. And so, you know, I was the one that I kept a lot of secrets, and I've talked about it in books, and I don't download dirt. I don't believe in sharing dirty laundry unless it benefits somebody else. But I saw a lot of the sides of life. And so I just kind of structured my life to try to pick choices that were sensible, I guess. Does that mean that I didn't make mistakes? Of course I've made mistakes. I've made many mistakes.
Did you see and witness all these things when you were young? When you were young, you were witnessing all of these things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I mean, you guys, it was crazy. I don't think I realized how big the show was back then. But yeah, we worked with everybody. I mean, you name it. I worked with it. Lucille Ball taught me lighting. She taught me how to cheat at Scrabble. I mean, Sammy Davis Jr. taught me to walk on a stage. You know, Elvis was called my mother constantly because she looked like his mom, but she would talk to him like a son. And so we had all these people coming in and out. And I, just like you, I'm sure, you know, all these people that come in and out. But I watched. And I really loved what I did. And I didn't want to mess it up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to keep doing what I loved. And, you know, I've been so blessed, just incredibly blessed. I still am in awe that I'm able to, you know, perform and do things I love.
It's funny you say that. It's like, I can't help but reflect on my own experiences. Like, I remember being younger and really wanting to get into my career. And like, my friends would go out and party or like show up to this certain, like, oh, we got to go to this party or we got to go do this. And like, I never wanted to go. I never wanted to really be a part of it. I was so specific about where, because it was so important to me to maintain some, I mean, mystery, I guess, or just some self-respect. Like, I didn't want to be seen as like a club girl or, and I, because I cared so much about what I loved to do.
And I know hanging with a lot of men, not brothers, yes, but a lot of their friends and hanging around, I just hung around a lot of men. I heard how they would talk and I never wanted to be part of that talk.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm the same. I had the same thing where I was like, I never wanted to be a notch on somebody's belt.
Yeah.
I was very particular about who I would hang out with. But, and then deep down, like when my friends would be, you know, dancing on tables, I would be like, oh God, I'd give anything to be on that table. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember going to Vegas one time, my girlfriends, and they were all on like stripper poles. And I was like, oh God, I wish I could just whip myself around that stripper pole right now. But I didn't do it.
And then instead you installed one in your bathroom.
You would have been great. That thing is, you know, we would have been great at it, but I didn't want that. And so, you know, but I would go home and I'd read and I'd study and I'd learn and I'd push. I mean, when I worked for Rodgers and Hammerstein and I was there, you know, I was their girl for a while and I did like King and I in Broadway and a bunch of Sound of Music and all that. I couldn't sing, you know, The Heels Are Alive in country music. So I learned legit soprano. And then the lady who taught me that and my British accent and everything, she said, honey, you can sing opera. And I went, shut up, you know? And so I spent 20 years learning to sing opera before I ever put it out on an album. And the one reason I did it is I love to push myself. You know, would I ever use it? No, I never thought I would. But in my show, it's so fun. I sing Paper Roses, which I recorded when I was 12 years old. It was my first number one record. And then I'll sing Nessun Dorma right next to it. And it's so fun to see people's eyeballs go, wait a minute, I thought she just sang country music. And so it's just really fun to shop, you know, just to, and that's what it is you spend time being diverse, you know, and instead of being out, that's what I saw, is I saw people wasting their time and I didn't want to do it.
The Donnie Marie Show, right? How long did that last?
Like 4 years.
4 years.
But it was, but there was no show quite like it. It was
right.
variety. Like, you know, they say, okay, so like this week you're going to tap dance on a giant typewriter to emulate the movie mm-hmm. from the 1940s. And then you're going to be, you know, an alphabet and jump into a bowl of gigantic soup. And, you know, it was just insane what we did. But I was so young that I just went, oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you did it.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah. So, you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand mm-hmm. of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think that because you became such the iconic kind of pairing out of all of the siblings, you guys really kind of became a much more known together, did that create any
rifts?
No, no and yes. Because that's when my brothers kind of went into the production end of things and they kind of let their music slide. And I'm sure that there was a piece of them because they wrote like the first concept albums. Like there was an album called The Plan and Crazy Horses. And I've heard people in their 30s and 40s now, they'll go back and say, man, they were really good. And it makes my brothers feel good because their music was very important to them. But Donnie, see, so what happened is Donnie started losing his high notes. And so I would go in and sing them mm-hmm. on the out records. And one of the execs came in and said, my goodness, she can sing. And so that's how I went to Nashville and I started having my country hits. Donnie separated from the brothers and started having his pop hits. And that's where the thing came, a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll came from, because we both came from different musical styles. Mm-hmm. And also there were no brother sisters on TV.
Right.
It was a very unique relationship, you know?
There's still really not.
Yeah, but you don't want to do it.
What are you talking about?
Talk show, we'd make millions, what? If not billions.
It's not about what you make.
Of course it is.
God damn it. You're honestly.
No, it is. I mean, we'd have a great time.
But
we'd also
know,
make
at
billions.
At that time, you had Carol Burnett, you had Sonny and Cher.
Billions.
Yeah.
But siblings, you. There's not sibling relationships out there. It's a very unique relationship.
It's so important too. And let's talk about that. You grew up as 9 siblings and then you just decide to have 8 children.
I really didn't. God had a lot to do with that. I really didn't. Yeah. I couldn't have children very well. And, I remember one day one of my, I can't remember which ones are adopted, but I do have some that are adopted. But she came in and she was 6 years old and she said, I know why God made it so you couldn't have children. And I said, but she said babies. And I said, why? She says, because you breed idiots. And she had just had a fight. She had a fight with her brother. And, but my children, so what's really cool.
That's funny. Deeply funny. That's
really, it's an amazing joke, by the way. Yeah, that's a great
line.
She's
so funny. But my kids are so different. I mean, I have one of everything. I really do. I could not have more diverse children. And I love it because they are so in love with each other and they are so protective of each other. And they are so, like, if one of them struggles, man, they're all there. And it just, it's like the greatest thing a mom can have is to know that you leave kids that are good people and that respect each other and give back to society. I mean, like I said, they're all very unique and they're really different, but I've learned so much in being
What's
a mom.
What's the age range?
40 to 21.
Okay.
And did you take anything from being raised in a big family? Like, what are the things that you feel like you took on and was like, I loved the way my mom and dad did this for us? And what are the things that you're like, absolutely not, we're breaking that cycle?
Yeah. Well, I think my parents were perfect. Were they perfect? No, but I think they were perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's perfect, but for me, I made a lot of mistakes. And I know being the performer, it's great to be busy, but when you bring your kids can't just sit around and do nothing while you're working. But it was either that or leave them home, and I wouldn't leave them home. And I've told my children that there was no option for me. They were not going to stay home. I didn't have them to have somebody else raise them. And so, I've got, like, my oldest is incredibly talented, can sing, my daughter, you know, but, I said, I really didn't want them to be in show business. I would rather them have a life. And they wanted a life where they could go home and be with their families and their kids and have dinner and those kinds of things. Because it's not an easy world. I mean, I look at you guys. It's not easy to have parents that are entertainers. I'm sorry, but I know from having children that
it's very challenging.
It is
so challenging. None of them gravitated towards the business at all. None of them wanted to be in it.
Yeah, my son, but he is a thinker like me, and he said, Mom, I don't really think I want to worry about my next job before this one's done, because you know you always have to keep working ahead. And I mean, I'm always like 2 or 3 years ahead planning things, because not everything turns out and you want to have something exciting. And he goes, and my son, by the way, is 40. He's going to be retired in 2 years. He's doing great. He's very successful. He has 4 children and he loves being able to go home and be with his kids at night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my other daughter has 2 children. My other daughter has 3 children. So, I have 9 grandchildren and it's the best.
I do.
So
great. And that's so fun.
That's the best.
I mean, you have 9 grandchildren and you're how old are you?
I'm 60. Yeah, I'm 64. I have no problems with
that's
age.
That's so great. If 9 grand at 64 is like the best. I feel like that's going to be me with Ryder.
Wow, so you were young when you had your first.
I was 23, when I had my first.
So that's like,
you know what? It's like the other day my grandson came up to me and he goes, Grandma, I think you're famous. Are you famous? And I said, only because I'm your grandma. And he goes, oh, okay. Well, you sing with Nana and my mom and that at my baptism. Blah, blah, blah. So that's like him. And then my other grandson, who's my oldest, he sent me a video. I'm going to put it on my social. He goes, Alexa, who's Maria Ozma's most famous grandson? And it named him, and he's like, yeah! they all know me different, you know, as different. But I'm grandma. That's what I want to be. I just want to be grandma.
Has God been in your life since the beginning? Or?
Yeah, he has.
Through your family and all your brothers and everyone? Right.
Yeah, they're all pretty, yeah, they're all very, very strong faith, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but I think that might've been part of my, desire to know things young is because I'm not the kind of person that would say, oh yeah, you know, I'm a member of this religion because my mom and dad are, that's so not me. You know, I had to know for myself. So I've studied multiple religions and, you know, beliefs and things like that. So it's, but I feel like it's important to have a higher source to keep you in check, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's just,
and
that's
are all me. Of your children, or do all of your children follow the same or as religious as the family sort of carry?
No. No. I have, like I said, I have 8 of the most diverse souls on the planet, and I could tell you great stories of how they came to me, believe me. And then there are times where, you know, they struggle with attachment disorders and all kinds of things. And I've studied psychology and trying to help and understand how they feel. And there was a period of time where I went to my mom, I think I was about 9 years old, and I did not, you know how your body changes, and I just did not look like my brothers at all. And I went to my mom and I said, Mom, am I adopted? And she laughed and walked away. Well, I took that as I was adopted. And I thought for like a year I was adopted. I didn't dare ask any more questions. And I told my kids that are, I said, you know, I know how you understand. I believe I have an understanding of how you feel. So I've never had any weirdness about that with them. If they, you know, if they want to meet their biological, I wait till they're 18 so they're emotionally can handle it, because it's not always good, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've said to them, I said, you know, if you have issues with me being your mom, get over it, because you chose me. and they, you know, I'm mom. They love me, and I just couldn't love my kids, all of them. They're all my, they're just, I don't divide them up. They're just amazing children. So my story is not always happy, but you know, people get involved in relationships, broke up my first marriage. I remarried, not a great marriage, 20 years. Finally, 20 you know, years? You know, it's, yeah, you know, it's good to leave.
Wow.
Well, I didn't want to have my children have another divorce. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right,
I
just yeah,
didn't want, yeah. You understand as a parent, you don't want that for your child. But when your children come to you and say, please leave, I'm like, yes, I will. And I swore I'd never get married again. I swore. And I was the only financial supporter of my children. So, you know, I had to work. And anyway, I went to Vegas because of my oldest, ran into my first husband, and we remarried.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
You remarried your first husband?
And love of my life. Best
yeah,
step.
Well, yeah. I'll wow. never remarry my first husband. But that's okay. He feels
wait a
the
minute,
same
wait a minute.
Way.
I don't want to get too personal, but like you broke up. Why the first time?
There were a lot of reasons. And it's not a nice business. You know, I'm not a person. I'm not that. I could write the most interesting book on the planet about the people I've worked with and everything else. I never will, because I don't believe in that.
I agree.
And I know you could too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sometimes like, if I actually wrote a book about how from day one, I mean, you know, or I'd say, let's say my first memories.
Yeah.
All the way. I mean, I can't imagine what that must be like for you.
Oh God.
But you have that too. You have that, you know, you're still so young. I mean, you have years and years and years to collect data.
Even more stories. It's like I'm with you though. I don't believe in this. I don't know. Or maybe it's also because I just really believe in putting positive things out in the world.
I agree with you.
And
totally.
Like pushing those things. And I also feel that, you know, there are circumstances that do happen to you, but there's a lot of things that I could share that I am no victim to, that I found myself in those circumstances as well.
Sure.
There's so many stories.
And it's like people nowadays are so craving to find fault. And I just think that's a sad scenario for our society, because I think the most, hey, we can find bad about anybody. You, if you want to dig deep enough, you can always, but why? What is the point? And what a waste of life. Mm-hmm. And what a waste of trying to better yourself. It's a waste of our life.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah. So, you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female founded.
Yes. I love a female founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been, over the last 20 years, like, just stealing really personal items from my family and really, like, really compromising pictures and shit that I can sell for a lot of money if things go wrong.
You can use against them.
I have a safe filled with things.
He's just projecting because he knows we actually have those of him.
That's
yeah, but they're not going to sell for anything because I put them out there for free.
Oh my God. I'm doing this thing. It's like an advertising thing. I won't name who I'm doing it with, but I put this thing together, and in it, Oliver sort of walked away naked. He loves to be naked. It's very funny. And it was so funny in this advertisement. and they came back. They're like, look, we love your brother, but you got to take the nudity out. Yeah. It's like, oh, Oliver.
That's
the
ridiculous.
Best of him just always gets cut out.
That's ridiculous. So now it's just the first part?
Yeah. It's okay. I guess there are people in the world who've had these amazing lives, who've experienced and seen so much. Like talking to you right now, I kind of want to go back into the story of the girl in Vegas who was, Elvis was calling her dad, and, you know, Sammy Davis was teaching. You know what I mean? It's just, How old were you then?
I was a teenager. Yeah.
Could you imagine being a teenager in Vegas at that, in that era?
No.
And being at like the, you know, height of,
you know, you saw the movie on Elvis, right? The one and Tom Hanks was
with Austin
it was
Butler.
Actually quite accurate. Not so much Butler. The Colonel, but that was a very accurate portrayal because he would call my mom because we played the same hotel when he wasn't there. And but she would call him in that room. He would sit up there. That we stayed in that suite as well. And it was so dark and lonely. And everything was there that you need, except maybe real people. And that was kind of that era. And one of the things I think that was very changing from him was that he said, do not let management do to you, speaking to us as kids and entertainers, do to you what the Colonel did to me. And that was isolate myself from your fans. And I think because of that, I go out of my way. Like when we were in Vegas for 11 years performing, Donnie likes to go fast and go home, right? Sometimes I would stay for hours. And I would always just say, I believe in female intuition. And I believe every woman has it. My mother was like creepy with it. And now then my children say that I'm creepy with it. Like they'd be ready to do something bad at a party. And I go, hi, how are you doing? What are you doing? And they'd be like, Mom, we hate you. And so,
but you knew.
I did. I knew, just like my mom. But she told me, we have it. It's a muscle. It's like anything. If you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll feel these feelings and follow them. And so that's one of those things that I watched and I learned from my mother and how she, and there were times, you know, that she'd be talking to him and I'd kind of walk by the door and she'd just shut it.
Yeah.
But,
what did my mom say? My mom said, people say women's intuition. And my mom, I think, said, I have beyond women's intuition.
Right? I know, right? That was my mom.
The BWI.
That's
beyond women's intuition. Like, that's more than, you know.
But it's a gift that we have, and it is so real. And the more you listen to it, the more it'll astound you.
So you would sit with your fans and for hours.
Hours. And there was this one time I was so sick. I've been through some health things and I would like vomit every show. And finally I just, you know, they had to get to the source of it. But I was so sick this one night. And I remember it was like, no, you're going down to the meet and greet. And I went down. I knew it was going to be at least an hour and a half to 3 hours. And it was really interesting. And not that there weren't lovely people, there were, but there was nothing like life-changing until next to the last person after 3 hours. And she threw her arms around me and said, I lost my son 6 days ago from suicide. I lost a child from suicide. And she said, I didn't see your show. I flew in just for the meet and greet and I have to fly right back because I have to go back to work. But nobody understands. And I know you do. If I had not gone, that whole trip would have been in vain for her. So I sat and talked with her for a couple of hours after we were up to like 2:30. But that's right. That intuition.
You say that, you know, I unfortunately have a very good friend who also lost just recently a child to suicide. And what is sort of the, I know this is maybe feels like a silly question, but as someone who's, you know, supporting this, my girlfriend right now, what do you think is the first thing that when you're going through that grieving process is important to tell someone that you know and love that's going through it? Like, what was the best support system you had and what did that look like during that time? Like, if someone could have given you some insight.
Well, I think, so one of the things that happened to me is I guess that the hotel told people not to say anything to me. Well, I got a lot of heat from people because I went back to work 2 weeks later and, you know, people just love to criticize. And I'm like, you don't understand. I have 7 more children that need to keep living. And because the siblings were devastated by it, let alone the parent. But so I went back to work and it was so bloody hard. I can't even tell you. It was just awful. And so I was in this meet and greet and this woman came up to me I guess that he had been gone about almost a month. And she goes, I know we're not supposed to say anything to you, but I lost my son. And I said, who told you you could? And that's when I found out. And I said to her, I said, so does it ever get easier? And she said, no. And I said, okay, I can live with that. She says, but over time, God will give you longer respites and things will happen that will bring you peace. But initially it is just the most awful. You just want to go back to sleep and wake up from a bad dream. But one of the greatest things that I was told by a sibling who lost a sibling was to give all of my children, and I got myself one too, and write to them and write things you remember and write if you're angry and write if you're sad and write if, and then write everything you can because you'll forget. And they're wonderful journals to look back on, you know, just to, and you can get out things on paper that you can't say sometimes as the person who has lost. So I would get him a journal and just say, if you're hurting, let's talk. It's, you know, it's okay. Is it ever going to get better? You're never going to get over it, but there will be respites, you know?
I've noticed my friend saying to me that, like, when she thinks that, I think a lot of people think when someone's going through that, like, I don't know what to say. Should I call them? Do I connect with them? What do I say? And then, you know, that becomes the thing that they say, which is like, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. I have no words. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to say anything. You just be there.
And I think that that was what, you know, she said to me, which is the support and just people even just saying, you know, I love you so much and I'm here and I love you. And that's really,
that's the most powerful, is that people are afraid to talk to you.
Yeah.
And just to say, I'm not afraid of this. This must be the worst. I can't even imagine.
Must be the worst thing.
The worst ever.
And that mean, and that having that support is so meaningful, and I can see it in my friend right now.
I think loss of anybody that we love is horrible. I mean, I remember when I lost my mom, my brothers were just worthless. And so I had to do everything. And so I never really got to grieve, and I was taking care of my children and everything else. Well, it hit me a year. She passed away on Mother's Day. Mm. And it was a year to that date. I was driving up the canyon. I was in Utah, and I just start sobbing. And I think that's what I do, is I get in the car and I just drive, you know, that's kind of my way to deal with things. And all of a sudden I felt her, I swear to you guys, I felt her say, Marie, turn the car around and go to Nordstrom. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am massively dysfunctional. And so I went up the canyon a little further. It was like, turn this car around and go to Nordstrom. And I was like, fine. And so I turned the car around. I went down to the mall, walked into Nordstrom, and like, okay, now what? But this is intuitive thing, you know? And it was like, go up the escalator. And I felt prompted, long story short, felt prompted to go into this women's department that I would never shop in. And I turned around and there was a skirt there with hundreds of little butterflies. Well, that was symbolic. And my mother always talked about butterflies, meaning the angels are with you. And I realized that when I was going through really difficult things as a young girl, my mom would take me shopping. We wouldn't necessarily buy anything, but we would shop and always get ice cream after. And so I realized that my mom intuitively, spiritually was taking me shopping. So I bought the skirt and I took the skirt out for ice cream. And it was so lovely. And if you look for those things in grief, you'll find them.
Mm-hmm.
You really will. Those little tiny little tender mercies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess? Yes. Female founded.
Yes. I love a female founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's do, we do usually like a little rapid fire.
Okay.
Coffee or tea?
I don't drink either.
Oh. Whoa, no caffeine.
Nope. Well, no, I do. I take caffeine, but if I take it, so I have one, my friend is one of the top brain surgeons in the world. And he said, if you need the caffeine, just do the pill, half of a pill, because you don't need all the other chemicals that and all the other things it does to your stomach. So like tea is like tannic acid and it makes it so you don't absorb nutrients, and coffee is terrible for your stomach, but it's very good for a colonic.
So wait,
it is.
Yeah. Coffee colonics. Wait a minute. What, do you have a vice? Any vice?
Her face just dropped.
Yeah, it did.
Literally, your face just dropped. It's like, oh.
Right. Do you have any vice at all? Like, mine is drinking, smoking, weed, and we can go on.
Do I have a vice? I have just had to be very careful with my health. And so I'm pretty. But I do like ice cream. I mean, if I could eat ice cream every day, I would eat it.
Got it. So like it's a guilty thing.
But that's
thing,
not
like
really
ice
advice,
cream.
Right? Is
no,
it?
No. Well, no. It is if it's something
anything
that
in
is not good for you that makes
good.
You feel good.
That's
right.
Right.
Exactly.
Anything in it. Who is your first crush, your real crush in real life?
And then celebrity after that. I want to know who you, especially growing up, who you grew
are you
up
saying
with?
Like
Uncle Brett?
Uncle Brett?
No.
Well, he was one of my young crushes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, probably Andy Gibb. We were close. Yeah.
Andy Gibb. He was hot.
Yeah. He was amazing. Television loved him. We were very close. Yeah.
There's more to that story, but we're not going to tell.
Yeah, she gave a lot of tells. She wiped her nose and things. A lot of tells.
Okay. So if you could sort of, this is really going to be hard, but if you could
describe your sibling group in one word or two words, what would that be? First thing that comes to mind.
You mean my brothers?
Yeah.
They are interlinked.
Interlinked. I think there's a hyphen in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't count.
They grew up together and they'll all die together. Do you know what I'm saying? They're just
connected. I love that. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you typically you would think, oh no, this person hates this person. These two are more tight. You know?
We have a family group text and they all day long each other.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Who responds the least in the family group text?
Donnie.
And who is like always sending things on the family group
text? Yeah. Who's like, you got to stop.
Alan and Merrill.
Who's the funniest?
Wayne.
Who is the one that you would go to if you were, who would be your first phone call if you were in jail?
I would say Wayne. Well, Wayne would know what to do. Meryl.
Okay.
Which brother is most likely to be naked?
All of them.
Don't you think all men like to be naked?
God, it's so true. What is that? It's not even, like, penises aren't even that attractive.
I just go backside.
You know what I mean? Like, they don't care. Maybe that's why.
I don't go full frontal.
No. Yeah. Give you a couple more years.
No. I can't do that yet.
Okay. So if you could have any superpower, what would that superpower be?
Ooh, I want to know that for you and you. Mm. Superpower?
Mm-hmm. I'd fly.
Oh, I don't know.
This changes like daily for me.
I'd fly if you can fly.
I know it's really hard because I don't know that it would change for me constantly too. So this year, because you're under contract, you can't break an arm. You can't. So you're always like being careful. This year I said, and actually started last year, but I'm terrified of heights. Mm. So I jumped out of an airplane.
Wow.
I climbed Mount Sinai. And yeah, I've just been doing all these fun, insane things. I climbed pyramids, went to Iceland. I mean, I just am. So a superpower is just not to be afraid of any. I'm just
going
for
it. Do you go with your husband?
Mine is to be truly fearless. Like that's very hard.
That's what I would say. It's just to just go for it. And I'm going to Iwasu Falls next. And I just want to have fun, you know?
This is crazy.
I raised my children.
You've done so many things. Sucks. I haven't done anything. I mean,
That's not true.
I mean, it's incredible the things that you've done and gone and seen and it's a desire for you to conquer fears and, you know, constantly moving forward.
But see, this is why we should never compare ourselves because you forget I'm 64 and I've had a lifetime of trying things.
Yeah.
Well, and so it just accumulates. So by the time you're 64, you just keep doing things and learning things. I mean, I never thought I'd have my portfolio. I have a crazy portfolio, do you know? Mm-hmm. And you never think of that when you're 20 or 30 or 40. You just do, you know? So don't
my time's coming. That's like late 60s, 70s. It's all going to congeal.
Okay, so then let's do the last question, which I'm just coming up with off the top of my head because of what you're saying, which is you're doing all these things, but what is it that you are most looking forward to doing this year? What is the number one thing? Yeah.
Now that the kids are all out of the house and they're all doing great and they're all financially good on their own, I just want to be with my husband.
But you've been with him for so long.
Not enough. Just the two of us. We really like each other. Yeah.
Wow.
Would you say he's your best friend?
Yes. But, you know, here's probably the reason why. 17 of my friends from age 55 to 65 just lost their spouses. Crazy, weird ways. Like within a day to a week.
Did you say 17?
17 of my friends.
What?
And they were just at that age where their kids were moving out and they were going to start living their lives. And I went, no. I'm going to start living my life while we're healthy and while we can have fun together.
Yikes, that's so many people. It's unbelievable.
He's the love of my life. And he's the reason, you know, I don't want to go through life alone. I want someone to document it with and to be a part and to know me. He knows me. He loves me for me, not for who I am. And I know he's proud of the things I've done, but that's not why we love each other. You know, he's waving goodbye to me.
he's like, goodbye. I'm going on my motorcycle ride.
All right, I'll see you in a minute.
All right, one more question, then we're done. Are you ever going to retire?
I don't know that I could. I don't feel like I need to prove anything. Like, I guess I can choose what I want to do. But I might be that old lady on Broadway that does the funny role. You know what I mean? I love humor. And I'm a weird animal. You know, people like me don't exist much anymore. So I don't know. You know, I mean, Betty White was like a second mom to me, and Cloris Leachman and all these people. So, you know, I love older women and I can sing and I can dance and I can do whatever. So, you know, maybe a Broadway role down the, maybe a part in a film or something. I don't know. But
good. So
I don't know. I never say never. Yeah. Honestly, I was looking so forward to this because you have a perspective that a lot of siblings don't have with your parents and everything that you've been through and being in the business. And like I said, there's not very many people that you can go, I get you. I understand. I get you from this point of view. And so this has been like one of the most fun interviews I've done.
Thank you. Well, we had a blast too. Have so this much fun on the motorcycles. Fun. Be safe. What are you riding?
I have a Harley. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
God, what you don't you cooler. Do? What don't you get do? Cooler. My gosh. All right.
Have a great rest of your day. Hopefully we'll see you down the road. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Be fun. Get a hug.
All right.
All right, you guys.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your podcast. It's really fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye. Right.
Bye.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.